Welcome back to the Torbay Hospitality Podcast. We have got a killer episode for you today.
Incredible. We have an amazing interview with a doctor, Kevin Dixon.
Dr. Dixon.
And he's here to tell us all about some spooky stories.
Spooky. Yeah, it's a spooky episode, our Halloween special. This podcast is sponsored by Consilio Insurance in Torbay and Teignbridge. Contact Simon Steer at 07760-346-561 and give him a follow on socials. That's Consilio with a K. And also Treat Marketing on Beacon Key. Pop around to the Torbay Hospitality Clubhouse anytime for a cuppa and to chat about your marketing requirements.
Yeah, we love meeting new people, so don't feel shy. Just come straight over.
Absolutely. We love a pop-in.
But do knock on the door, please.
Yeah,
knock before you pop. Yeah.
Brilliant. So we've got some shout outs. I wanted to shout out Bob at the Bridge Group, Kelly and Rob Elford, Sam from the Council, Andy and Julian, and Andy's Brownies. And happy 50th to Helen.
Yeah, and I want to shout out Tuan, Zekia, my mother-in-law, Melody, Anya, Tuche, and Gulden.
Lovely. Shout out and congratulations to Gemma, I heard is in order.
Yes, big, big shout out to Gem. She's got herself a job at the new lounge, which was the former Harvester in Paignton. And she is starting next week with her training, which is really, really awesome.
That's congratulations to Gemma. Well done, Gem.
You go, girl.
And right, so headline news. Right, so we've got big news. So it's very positive for Torbay. So you can, over Christmas, you pay for an hour of parking and then you can stay for the entire day. And that's for the whole festive season. So from Friday the 1st of December through Tuesday the 2nd of January, you pay for an hour and you stay for the day. And so that is timed to coincide with the Bay of Lights Illumination Trail and to also let people do their Christmas shopping and, of course, enjoy all your great food and drink offers.
Yeah, very nice. That sounds really cool.
And then in some kind of sad news, bon voyage to Chloe at Fishcombe Cove. She's moving on to greener pastures. Did you see her social media post?
I did. And you know what? It's sad, but it's also kind of, I feel she's done so much there. She's really achieved so much. She's almost been like an inspiration for what beach cafes can be.
Yes.
In Torbay. And I just want to wish her the very best of luck.
Of course. They've had talks, yoga, like disco nights with DJs, burger nights, and they've served up good vibes for 5 years. They're closing the hatch for the final time this Saturday, the 28th. So be sure to pop down and say au revoir to delightful Chloe.
Yeah, and I think she did mention in the post that she's looking to sell.
Yes.
So if that's something you're interested in, get in touch with Chloe because you could be the new owner, the new champion of Fishing Cove.
Oh, that would be so good, isn't it? Chloe is such a big part of Torbay Hospitality and also, of course, a valued podcast guest. She will be missed.
Yes, indeed. But hopefully we'll get Chloe on. There's hope that she'll be able to give us one final, you know, bon voyage in person and maybe talk about the last 5 years.
So Chloe, I would love that.
Chloe, keep your ears up. Because we're going to get in contact for that.
Definitely. Turning to hotel news, the Headland Hotel is having a 2-for-1 flash sale. Ooh. And it's really easy. You just book your getaway for November. You book 2 nights and you pay for one. Simple.
That's great.
It's a great offer. It includes overnight accommodation, full English breakfast, and free parking. So book at headlandtorquay.com.
Yeah. And now onto the restaurant news. The Bay and Babbican Bay Cafe in Torquay are offering afternoon teas with a twist this Halloween.
Ooh.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Scream! Ah! Sorry. Scream teas for under £10.
Lovely. What comes with a scream tea?
It includes a selection of scary sandwiches, brownies, and witches' broomsticks.
What's a witch's broomstick?
Yeah, so they're going to be like kind of like lollies.
Oh, cute.
Which are witches' broomsticks. And they're going to be offering these Halloween-themed afternoon teas or scary teas, scream teas, every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And that's the Bay. The Babbican Bay Cafe will actually offer it every single day.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah. And if you want to book a scream tea, and we suggest that you do go ahead and book it before you turn up, you want to visit either the Bay or the Barbican Bay Cafe, depending on where you want to go, and you want to go visit their Facebook, and then you can book directly with them there.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Have you have you had a Sunday roast so far this autumn?
No.
No, you haven't? I haven't had one.
Even if I go to a place that offers Sunday roast, I'm still just going to get a burger.
Real, if you are a burger boy, honestly. So yeah, and hashtag post your roast. Hamilton's in Babbicombe on Sunday, they're having an October special. So you can choose from roast beef or roast pork, and it's served from 12 to 4. So you book your roast by email at hamiltons@travelinslimited.com. So it looks really good.
Okay, so is that going to be the first roast that you turn up to?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay, that's a tenacious maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I'm still interested in the Portofino one with the Italian porchetta.
Yeah, that one sounded good.
Yeah, yeah. That might have to be my first roast of the year.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah. Now let's have a look at some Halloween events.
Nice.
The Buccaneer in Babbicombe is hosting a Halloween party on Saturday, the 28th of October.
Nice. That's from 7 to midnight.
And, exactly. And they've got a night of games and prizes for the best fancy dress. The kids' games start from 7 and go on to 8:30. And that's apple bobbing, ring toss, and a beanbag toss. And then the games for the adults start at 9 p.m. And that's beer bong, limbo, plus the prize for the best fancy dress. They've got a reduced menu. So Halloween hot dogs, chips, burgers, fries, and so on. And that sounds like a great time.
Yeah, for everyone.
At the Buccaneer in Babbicombe on Saturday. What would your fancy dress be? What is your fancy dress going to be?
Always a witch, honestly. You're always a witch. Yeah, 100 times in a row, I'm a witch. It's just easy. You just put on like a long black dress, and I already have like long hair and stuff like that. And so you just have to do like really pale makeup and like just be a bit menacing.
Have you seen the adorable Instagram reel?
Oh God.
Of this little girl who can't pronounce what? She pronounces "wa" with a "b," and she's a
Halloween bitch.
And her mom asks, "Are you a good witch or a bad witch?" And she says, "I'm a bad witch," but she doesn't say witch.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I'll have
adorable.
To look for that.
Very adorable.
All right, and that's awesome. So we've got some Christmas events. Are you ready for this? You're a burger boy.
Yeah.
Meat 59 in Torquay has announced Christmas parties.
Okay, cool.
They've got some amazing sounding starters. How's this sound? Maple glazed pig in blankets. Yeah. That sounds really good.
That sounds great.
They've got a Christmas, like a special burger, and that's with like Sharpam Vineyard Brie and cranberry sauce, and you get like gravy for dipping. Doesn't that sound good? Would you dip your burger in gravy?
No.
You wouldn't? Oh, no. I would.
I think one of the main reasons I love burgers is because of the burger sauce. If I'm making a burger at home, I'll douse the burger in burger sauce, and then I'll have half the plate is full of burger sauce. I'm dipping it in the burger sauce.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I'm just
addicted
to burger sauce. To burger sauce, basically. The burger is just
the mechanism.
A vehicle for me to eat that burger sauce. It's weird if I'm just squirting it in my mouth.
They've got some other burgers too. Listen to this chicken sandwich. It's called Frickin' Chicken. I love that. And another chicken sandwich. It's called the Alabama Slammer with rosemary fries. My God, it sounds so good. And you get dessert too. And there's like puddings. And you also get like boozy whipped cream. It's like totally.
I think the maple glazed pig and blankets, that sounds incredible.
I know.
We could slice some of those up and put them in the burger.
Put them in the burger. Don't forget the sauce. So email them torquay@meat59.com. It is perfect for the burger lover in your life who maybe doesn't want to go out for like, you know, traditional turkey carvery type Christmas party, and you want to have a burger Christmas party. I think that's where we need to have the treat tourbet Christmas
100%
party.
100%
there, Lynn. Let's do it. Right. We're going to make our booking today. Well done. In bar news, congrats to all the winners at the Best Bar None Awards. That's on Tuesday at the Imperial, including the Offshore and the Green Ginger, amongst others. Well done.
Yeah, well done, guys.
And Viva Torquay is opening soon. Have you seen that Viva Torquay is ready?
I haven't seen it's ready, no.
It's on Victoria Parade, and it is the Bay's first activity venue, and they're going to have axe throwing, beer pong, darts, pool, table tennis, foosball, and so on.
Yeah.
So follow them on social media. They haven't announced their opening yet, but they're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. You search Viva Torquay, and they've announced they're going to announce their opening date real soon.
That's quite exciting. I think it's something quite different for the town. So
yeah, an activity bar.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who right? knew?
Are you now, ready to head over to Boathouse
now
Watch?
Now it's Boathouse Watch time, and I heard a very salacious rumor this time around this
really?
Week. Yeah, I have heard something like that.
The Boathouse stands as a relic of captivating history and intriguing mystery. Its recent acquisition by an unseen, elusive London man adds a fresh layer of intrigue to its rich tapestry of tales. The Boathouse's terrace overlooks the vast sea, and it holds an eerie secret. When the easterly winds blow strong, it carries with it the lament of sailors from the ill-fated HMS Venerable. This battleship, driven against the rocks by Roundham in 1784, sank, and it took 8 men down with it. The haunting cries of these unfortunate souls still echo on stormy nights in a chilling testament to their untimely demise.
I've heard it. I've heard something there at some point.
Within the walls of the Boathouse, the party room whispers its own special tale. The staff setting places have heard phantom music and laughter that ends abruptly in a distressing cry, and it's followed by an unnerving silence. The identity of these ghostly revelers and the cause of their sudden sorrow remains shrouded in mystery and adds to the spectral allure of the Boathouse. Adding to this kind of puzzle, recently discovered documents reveal that the captain of the doomed HMS Venerable survived the shipwreck. And more intriguing, he owned the Boathouse for a period before retreating to London.
Really?
This revelation intertwines the past and the present, and it binds these spectral cries of shipwrecked sailors to the Boathouse in a poignant, inexplicable way. Today, the Boathouse continues its silent vigil over the sea, its storied past and spectral secrets forever guarded by the unseen London man. And as the wind howls and the ghostly parties carry on, the Boathouse stands as a monument to this town's rich and haunted history, a beacon of mystery, drawing in those who dare to uncover its secrets.
Echoed the sound on Alistair's apartment door, 28 Baker Street. His eyes lifted from a dusty, old maritime book to find a courier with a large envelope. It bore the crest of a legal firm and contained the documents that would forever alter the course of his life. Somehow, he was now the owner of the Boathouse in the quaint town of Paignton. Intrigued, Alistair journeyed to the coastal town. The sight of the Boathouse, with its panoramic terrace overlooking the sea, filled him with an inexplicable sense of connection. The first time Alistair stepped into the Boathouse, he was struck by a profound sense of déjà vu. The creaking wooden floors, the faint scent of sea salt permeating the air, and the hauntingly beautiful view of the vast sea from the terrace felt eerily familiar, yet undeniably foreign. In the initial days, he spent his time exploring the nooks and crannies of the Boathouse, each room telling a silent tale of his past. The party room, with its grand chandelier and antique furniture, held an air of melancholic merriment. He often caught himself straining his ears for phantom music that his rational mind insisted was merely a product of local folklore. At twilight, he would sit on the terrace watching the sun turn into a dark, brooding entity. The easterly winds carried whispers of sorrow, the ethereal cries. Each mournful wail sent a shiver down his spine, making him feel like an intruder in a tragic, timeless play. His nights were restless. The silence of the Boathouse was often broken by inexplicable sounds. A soft shuffle of feet, hushed laughter, clinking glasses, as if the ghostly parties were carrying on in some parallel existence. His dreams were filled with faceless sailors and merry partygoers, their eyes pleading for release. Alistair also noticed subtle changes in the Boathouse. doors he remembered closing would be found mysteriously open. Lights would flicker without any reason, and he would often find objects moved from their original place. It felt as if the boathouse, with its spectral inhabitants, was trying to communicate with him, dragging him deeper into its haunting enigma. These eerie experiences, instead of deterring him, only strengthened his resolve. A sense of purpose replaced his initial apprehension. He was no longer just the owner of the boathouse, he had become part of its saga, the only living soul who could bring peace to its walls. Each uncanny incident, each whisper, became a piece of the larger puzzle that Alistair was determined to solve. His journey with the boathouse had truly begun, leading him down a path of mystery, courage, and an inexplicable connection with the spectral world. A historian by profession, Alistair was drawn into the enigma. He delved deeper, unearthing the link between the HMS Venerable's captain, who had survived the shipwreck, and the boathouse. This relation proved to be a turning point. The captain was his ancestor. The spectral cries of the sailors were not just echoes of a tragic past, they were laments of his own king. This personal connection transformed Alistair's curiosity into a mission. The relentless spirits were no longer just subjects of an intriguing history. They were his family, trapped in existence. He felt a responsibility to bring peace to these souls, to free them from their internal torment. His investigation led him to the party room, the epicenter of the phantom merriment. Late one night, as the easterly wind blew strong, he heard it. Music, laughter, sudden cry, and then silence. A chill ran down his spine. He could feel their despair, their longing for release. The spectral partygoers were not just ghosts, they were victims of a tragedy that the sea had forced upon them. Truth be told, it was a particularly violent storm that led to the abrupt end of the party within the boathouse, causing a tragic accident that resulted in the death of all the guests. As days turned into weeks, Alistair's quest became an obsession. He spent countless hours in local libraries, poring over maritime records and town chronicles. He interviewed elderly townsfolk, hoping their stories would provide a missing piece to his puzzle. His relentless pursuit bore fruit when he discovered a forgotten local legend. It spoke of a ritual performed by ancient seafarers to appease the sea and bring peace to lost souls. With hope in his heart, Alistair decided to carry out this ritual. On a stormy night, as the winds howled like the cries of doomed sailors, Alistair stood on the terrace of the boathouse. He recited the age-old verses, his voice competing with the wrath of the sea. The air grew thick with anticipation. Suddenly, the wind ceased its howling, the sea calmed, and an overwhelming silence ensued. For the first time since his arrival, Alistair slept peacefully. No cries, no phantom parties. He woke up to a serene morning, the sea at peace, its wrath seemingly quelled. He had succeeded in his mission. Had he brought peace to his ancestors? Mm. He walked into the party room, half expecting to hear phantom merriment. There was silence. Relief washed over him, only to be replaced by an eerie feeling. He noticed an old photograph, unnoticed until now, showing a group of merry partygoers. His gaze fell on a man standing slightly apart from the group. His heart skipped a beat. The man bore an uncanny resemblance to him. A chill ran down his spine as he realized that the boathouse still held secrets, ones that were closer to them than he could have ever imagined. His mission was far from over. It had just taken a turn deeper into the realm of the spectral and personal. He stood there staring at the photograph. Alistair knew that his journey with the boathouse was just beginning. So that's what I heard. That's the rumor I had.
I love it. I love it. That's incredible. What a tale. That takes Boathouse Watch to a new level.
Yeah. No, I heard that it was someone from London. I didn't realize we had a name. It's Alistair.
Alistair from London. Well, okay. Here we go.
Good luck, Alistair, with
let the rumors live on.
With all that.
So turning over to supplier news, you know, we had just recently some weather events with Storm Babette, and we reached out to our colleague over at Consilio Insurance about how you might protect your hospitality business. So we talked to Simon Steer, and he offered his tips. And first was to speak to your broker kind of face-to-face and make sure that you disclose everything about the property. For example, like if the property had ever flooded before. Secondly, he recommends that you make sure that all the policy conditions are adhered to, because you don't want to find yourself open to having a claim that can't be paid out because there's some kind of red tape or some sort of a clause that you weren't aware of. And to be open with your broker, give all the information that's requested, but then also listen to the broker to make sure that the policy conditions are completely understood. Great advice from Simon.
Yeah, yeah. And Simon's a really, really kind guy, really easy to speak to.
Oh, yeah. And so knowledgeable, too. Yeah.
What I really like about Simon is he's quite happy to, he's quite open to talk to people, even if they're not looking to renew their policy tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like he said that, you know, if someone wants to come speak to him, get some advice, even if the policy isn't due for review for another like couple of months, that's mm-hmm. fine. He's there to kind of like support you, which is nice. I really like that.
Yeah, completely dedicated to the Torbay hospitality sector, and then also in Teambridge too. So well done, Simon, and thanks for the advice. I think there are a lot of hospitality owners looking around for the next storm and going, oh God, are we next? So yeah, so really good. So thanks for that, Simon. Turning over to attractions news. Halloween's creeping closer, the daylight hours are growing shorter, and there is a chill in the air. And an eerie mist has descended over Tor Abbey.
Ooh.
Beware. That means that it's time for Abbey After Dark. So you need to book now and prepare for your spine-chilling family fun as you step into the haunting world of the Abbey. There's ghostly, ghostly figures, interactive, scary, spooky times, and illuminations and hair-raising special effects. Also Halloween-themed games and, of course, hot drinks and treats. And it runs through Saturday the 28th. Tickets are available now on the Tor Abbey website. That's tor-abbey.org.uk. And bring along your little monsters in their fancy dress. They are encouraged, so we'll see you there if you dare.
Yeah, and in the attractions news for Halloween, have you seen the apocalyptic alien trail?
Well, unfortunately, yes. Really so, cute, like a little alien, but yeah.
Yeah, it's very cute. So the trail, there's a free visitor attraction taking place during the October half term from the 23rd to the 31st of October at Cockington Court.
That's right. What's the story?
Well, I believe that there's been a UFO that's crash landed and has caused a zombie virus to spread across Cockington. So what you need to do is pick up your trail map and a pencil for £2 from the gallery shop inside the manor house. And then you hunt down the cure for the contamination zone before the zombies get you.
Oh, sounds like a good fun for the whole family.
Unless you get turned into a zombie, then it's not fun at all.
No, that's not good.
Really, be careful, guys.
Bad times. Turning over to events news, Cantina is offering a special South African wine tasting on the 3rd of November. And they've spent the last 2 weeks traveling all around South Africa from vineyard to vineyard. And they tried all the wines for you. Rest assured, Queenie would be right in there. And they've picked up the best. So they're going to bring along their favorite fizz, white, rosé, red, and sweet wines too. And it's always a good time at Cantina. So make sure that you book your tickets on Eventbrite. Tickets are £25. They must be bought in advance. So that is a South African wine tasting at Cantina.
For that £25, do you get your, is that including the wine?
Yeah, it includes wine, absolutely.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So yeah, South African wine tasting at Cantina on the 3rd of November. Yeah, there's more events.
We have a couple more events. So here's just the outlines. The first one, I got to say, this weekend is looking great if you're a comedy fan.
Yeah.
Really, really special weekend if you're a comedy fan in Torquay.
Yeah, it kicks off kind of, Friday, Torquay Comedy Club.
Yeah, so on Friday in the Torquay Comedy Club, they have their night, and that is going to be the Imperial Hotel. That's Friday from 7 until 11.
Right.
And
who's going to be there?
I am.
Callum and Gemma are going to be there at the Torquay Comedy Club.
Ben, for the invite.
Shout out, Ben.
Yeah, because I'm very excited. That sounds like a great night.
That's awesome.
And then another one, if you're a comedy fan, we have Jack Whitehall coming to the Princess Theatre, Torbay Road, and that's on the Sunday, the 29th of October.
Right. So
this Sunday, and that's from 6 until 10.
Fun. And then there's, have you seen this family rave? Big Fish, Little Fish Halloween family rave. That's at the Torquay Museum, Sunday at 2 in the afternoon.
So good. I really wish we had the picture in front of us, because the family, the picture looked like Daisy from yesterday.
Oh, okay. What, with a pumpkin head. Big pumpkin head. Bless her. She just wanted the little one on her cheek, and they colored in her whole face. Bless her. She did not look happy. She
looked like a basketball halfway through.
She didn't look happy at all. Bless her. Love you, Days.
Yeah, and then the last one that we have for events is going to be next week Thursday, but we're going to tell you about it now. And that's next week Thursday at 7:30. We have Professor Brian Cox coming in.
Right, Brian Cox.
And that's at the Princess Theatre on Torbay Road.
Lovely. And that's, over in Torquay.
Yeah, now onto the job board. So we've got kind of quite a few ones here. The first one is a front of house supervisor. That's the Pig and Whistle Inn in Totnes. And that's a full-time permanent role.
Good.
Yeah, we've got food servers and bar staff from the Railway Inn in Churston Ferris. We've got front of house supervisor. That's again Railway Inn. And then we have part-time servers-waiter-waitress. And that's Ollie's in Torwood Street. And then we have a waiting staff job post, and that's from the Orange Tree Restaurant. And I just want to mention that this one is the highest paying job per hour. Mm. So if you're going to apply, I'd apply for that one first. quite honestly. And six, we have part-time waiter-waitress, and that's at Portofino in Wellswood. Yeah, that's your...
Yeah, that's my local.
That's your local.
Right. And there's also a job posting cleaner at Viva Torquay with immediate start, set shifts and early hours. It's a hands-on job.
Yeah. And so if you want to see all of those jobs, I would go on to Indeed, except for the one at Viva Torquay. That one you need to send your CV to.
hello@vivatorquay.com.
Okay, awesome.
Great. So we've got a live music calendar. So tonight at the Stillhouse, New Days is playing at 7 p.m. And on Friday, they're at the Offshore at 9:30.
Very cool.
And over at the Spinning Wheel in Paignton on Friday night is Guy and the Upbeats. And on Saturday is Bottled Blondie.
Ooh.
They're having a fancy dress party with prizes, cocktails, and a DJ. It sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, that sounds fun.
And on Sunday night at the Spinning Wheel is the band Aquila. The Sunset Social Club has announced their 2023 winter dates, and it does include a residency at Surfside in Polzeath, and
that's
every Saturday until Christmas. So if you're heading down that way, make sure you stop in and see the boys. They're also going to be throwing a Sunset Social Club Christmas party right here in Torbay, and we cannot wait to have more details about it. Don't forget to invite us, Jack and Mark.
Yeah, please.
I know. And they're also at the Grand Hotel for the Great Gatsby party on New Year's Eve. So
that's cool.
I know. They're going to count us into 2024 in style.
Yes.
Nice. So, ready to head over to the weather?
Sunny, sunny, sunny.
Not sunny.
It's sunny both days.
Not sunny.
You can't tell me otherwise.
It's definitely rainy. So, it looks like, we've got bookends. Saturday, rain 14. Sunday, rain 14. Sorry.
Unless you abide by the Cullum forecast, which is going to be sunny.
Yes.
And sunny.
The Met Office says rain and rain. The Callum Office says sunny, sunny. Depends who you believe.
Callum's more of a...
Yeah. I know, he just had a finger in the air. So, right. So, we're going to head over to the interview shortly. And so, that is with Kevin Dixon, a local historian who's going to share all kinds of spooky tales all about Torbay.
Yeah, I really, really like his style of how he kind of goes through these stories. It seems like he's really interested in how these stories kind of populate, how they spread through communities. I just want to mention that he is a doctor of sociology, which so he has a really fantastic, fascinating perspective on these spooky stories.
Indeed, yeah. Real privilege to have him on to share in our Halloween episode. So thank you, Dr. Dixon, for coming by.
And over to you.
Oh, and he also has a book. We've got it here. It's called A Tour Key, A Social History. They sell it at the Torbay Visitor's Office. And if you wanted one of these for your hotel or your B&B, it's a great little book to have by because it's just so informative.
Yeah.
And it's got all kinds of really fascinating stories all about Torquay. Yes. And yeah, he's dropped off a signed copy for us. So thank you very much, Kevin.
Yeah, he did say if you want to get your own copy for your hotel, your B&B, your establishment, then contact him directly. That's the best way to do it. And you can do that just by typing in to Google Kevin Dixon.
Yep. All right, super. And here we are with Kevin Dixon, who is a local historian, and he's come by the podcast today to tell us a few spooky tales. Welcome, Kevin.
Welcome. That's terrific. Yes, certainly will do.
Oh, my gosh. You know, this is our Halloween episode, and so we're looking forward to having loads of spooky tales. Do you want to start us off with something really old or something really historic or something by the sea? What are you thinking?
Oh, let me see. Well, let me start off by saying that Torquay is a little bit exceptional. Yeah. I grew up here. I'm a sort of local lad.
Yeah.
And I went to a local school called Audley Park, which then became Torquay Community College and then became Torquay Academy. And another couple of years, it'll probably be called the University of Watcombe or something. so I'm just waiting there. I didn't do terribly well at school. I did something called O-Level History in my day. This back in the 1970s.
Okay.
And didn't do terribly well. It was only later that I got really interested in what I thought was real history. And real history is about what people talk about in pubs and clubs and coffee bars. And that's how I got kind of interested in this alternative ghosty stories and legends and things like that. And the bay is actually stuffed full of these.
Is it?
Really weird thing. And there was a survey they did a few years ago that said that more people have actually seen a ghost in Torquay than anywhere else in Britain.
Wow.
Oh, really?
And I actually believe that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Have you seen a ghost?
No, I haven't. That hasn't stopped me looking. And and I kind of started doing talks. And, you know, really sort of serious kind of history talks. And, you know, a lot of people are interested. You know, 20 or 30 people might turn up. You write something on the internet and, you know, a few people like it. Write anything about ghosts and it just goes viral.
Interesting.
And I did a talk a couple of weeks ago on weird Torquay, and Torquay is weird, believe me.
Well,
as you probably know.
We've been out on a Friday night, so we know how weird it can get.
Had 140 people turn up. Just
really?
And people are really fascinated. And it's one of the easiest talks I do because I always say right at the end, have you got any stories for me?
Yeah.
About a third of the audience have.
Wow.
And that fits in with how many people actually believe and have seen ghosts. And a lot of it, or something supernatural or something odd.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I kind of got into this.
Mm.
They start digging, you know, a little bit deeper. And there's kind of rules you can look at when people tell you a ghosty story.
What kind of rules?
Right. If somebody tells me a ghost story or a story about something, first thing I'll say is, okay, you know, how complicated is it? You know, if somebody says to me, for example, I just saw something weird coming down the stairs, I'll believe them. If they come up to me and said it's some great historical figure that's, you know, you start thinking, well, probably somebody made this up or they wrote it down. The more complicated, the more less likely it is to be true, in inverted commas, I think.
It's like, for me, it's like seeing something, sure, but then you're making quite a big leap of faith to say, I've seen something, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, I agree with you. That's, But I don't know what it is to, it's this historical thing, it's this ghost, it's this thing. That's quite a big leap of faith for me.
That's it. And the stories, you know, and you often get these long established stories that go back for, you know, that go back for centuries, but you sort of dig into them. And a lot of them have been brought in. I mean, there's possible reasons why so many people in Torquay believe or have seen ghosts.
Yeah.
I think there's some, you know, quite scientific reasons.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But I think for me, it's like an onion, isn't it? So you kind of peel away a layer after layer after, and is there something right at the beginning of it?
Yeah.
And I think that's it. I always check, you know, whether this kind of story has appeared somewhere else. They often do.
Yes.
You know, and the Victorians the coach drivers that used to gather around Torquay Harbourside, you know, just selling trips. Mm-hmm. And if you're selling a trip, it's competitive. You're going to get bigger tips the more exciting your stories are. Mm-hmm. So you can actually look at these old stories about, you know, who died here, who lived here. A lot of this. Torab is a perfect example.
Yeah.
There's so many sort of layer after layer of stories, and a lot of those are probably brought in.
Yes, about the Spanish barn and all sorts. Ooh,
can I do a quote on that? I've got something to read.
Please,
can I do that one?
Yes.
This is something I bought. There used to be a little cheap bookshop in Paignton. Near Liddell's, and I went in there once and I bought a book, and I won't give you the full title, but it's The True Life Sightings and Experiences of Ghosts. Brilliant. So it's got hundreds of ghosts right across the old country, Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland and things. And on page 186 it says, here we go, this is the Spanish barn. Everyone knows the Spanish barn if you live in Torquay.
Yeah.
So although the barn that stands today is a perfectly pleasant place to visit, it is said to house some strange paranormal activity.
Mm.
Including a stench of decay and disease that can wash over a person in an instant, but has no known source.
Oh.
Now, if you've never been to Torquay, you know, you'd think, wow, that's exciting.
That's quite intense. So,
and I was in there giving a talk a few weeks ago, and, you know, there's no smell. There's a cafe in there now, so hopefully there's no stench. Yes. It's a lovely place. Certainly recommend it. However, if you've ever driven along Torquay seafront in August when the tide's out, there is a stench. So supernatural or seaweed, you decide.
Oh.
See what I mean? So there's these kind of possible explanations.
Yes.
Okay.
And this has gone right around the world. I mean, that book's, you know, been sold around the world. And whenever I give a talk, you know, you just talk about these little strange stories. And then somebody in a ghost hunting society in Arkansas will decide that it's really true.
Yes, yes.
And then it just kind of replicates.
Yeah, and build on the story. I don't want to ruin Lynn's hopes and dreams of some very in-depth stories here, though.
Oh, God, there are many, many of those kind of stories.
Yeah, because you were saying...
Some are just glimpses.
But... Yeah, you were saying that most of them you would dismiss, or you would say, that doesn't seem likely, but there are. You said there's a handful where you couldn't wrap your brain around it.
I think for me, it's when you've got corroborating evidence, when more than one person's seen it.
Okay.
Because a lot of these stories I get told are people that are just going to sleep or just waking up, or they're in bed, so you can possibly say, well, it's this state, you know, when you're just going. I don't want to debunk all of this stuff, but as a scientist, trained as a scientist, you look at all of these kind of explanations.
Evidence.
But when you get there's a couple of things. There's things called time slip ghosts.
Mm, okay.
Ooh. Or when people see completely different landscapes. Mm. I mean Berry Pomeroy, I mean, is the obvious one. And this isn't in the castle. There's one story where there was two ladies that wanted to visit Berry Pomeroy Castle, got themselves a little bit lost, and they ended up in the in a house, a little farmhouse at the bottom of the cliffs.
Yeah.
And they drove in thinking, and it's a dead end. Just about as they start to turn around, they saw an old well with some raggedy children standing around it. And and there was a house there, a thatched house with a hole in the roof, all sort of derelict. And they thought, oh, we're in the wrong place. The kids don't look particularly friendly anyway.
Yeah.
Drove out. Next day went back. The roofs have been repaired. There's no well there.
Mm.
So that's the kind of time slip thing.
Yeah.
And that's a local one. And that these things seem to happen. And when I gave a talk, there was another lady who said she went to a Neolithic, you know, colonial Bronze Age mining site in Norfolk. And she was sort of sat in there having a picnic and looked across, and she saw a lot of miners in rags just... And there was a gentleman sitting next to her, and she looked at him and he said to her, can you see them as well?
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
So,
okay.
You know, there's a little bit of evidence. Or now, there could be other explanations.
Yeah.
There's something odd about Torquay.
Okay,
we can talk about the scientific stuff later, but...
Well, yeah. Where's more spooky, Torquay or Paignton? Or Brixham? Torquay.
Well, that's where you get more and more stories.
Yeah.
One of the suggestions is, to go to a possible scientific explanation, right? Which I don't want to spoil everything. One of the suggestions is that if you look at Torquay, it's built on limestone.
Yes.
So if you walk up Torquay, it's all... You've got these limestone valleys and limestone cliffs and things like that. So you've got all these houses, and if you look in Ellicombe and you look at Melville Hill and Warren Road, a lot of these houses are actually built onto limestone. Limestone doesn't absorb water.
Okay.
Which means that some of those properties have issues around damp.
Okay. Ah.
So when you get damp, you get black mould, and when you get black mould and you don't you don't have sort of a natural airflow through, or if you've got old houses and you've got paraffin heaters and you've got coal fires and people don't open their windows, that can cause hallucinations.
Mm.
That might be one of the reasons.
Mm.
If you want to get even creepier, there's something called the Stickle Path Fault, which goes right the way down
Stickle,
through Devon.
Stickle Path Fault.
Fault, yeah. It's an old geological fault. This is absolutely true. You can actually go and see it today if you go into Torquay.
Let's go.
Yep, go and have a look. We might even see it from the studio here. It's out,
really?
So it comes down through near Barnstaple.
Yeah.
Goes right the way down through Devon, through Dartmoor, comes out through Newton Abbot to where you get the clay pits and things. And then it pops out at Rock Walk.
Okay. Never.
And it's a crack. It's about a foot, 2 or 3 feet wide.
Really?
And it's a geological fault. And I mean, all the geologists will tell you it's there. So that's the real stuff. And then it heads out to sea.
Yes.
And in 1955, there was a minor earthquake in Torquay. It didn't cause much damage, but it was the idea that the rocks were... Now, this is when it gets into more esoteric stuff. There's a suggestion that when you... And I don't know whether to believe this or not, but when you... when people live on sort of geological faults, it somehow affects them. And the parallel is, and this is really, really, really stretching it, you've got the San Andreas Fault in California.
Yeah.
You know, which is supposed to go through where the earthquake is. Yeah.
Yes.
Right the way through. And some people say some of the strange things that happen in San Francisco and Los Angeles are due to that fault.
Oh.
You know, the Charles Manson
stuff.
Yeah,
I've heard fault lines. And
like I'm thinking ley lines, like Roslyn and stuff, like Da Vinci Code stuff. But I think fault lines and ley lines are different.
Yeah. Except, yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, you can actually go and see it. We could... You know, 5 minutes walk from here, I can point to the crack in the wall.
Oh.
Now, I didn't believe any of this stuff, but as I said, I do so many of these lectures. And then a lot of people that come up with these ideas say, oh, well, I live just by that or just very close to it. So
interesting.
It's up to you whether you believe that or not.
Yeah.
So do you think you're more or less of a skeptic than you were when you first started your kind of career in Spooky Town?
I think probably a little bit less. It's those 2%.
Yeah.
Of stories that I've been finding particularly, because I'm really interested in psychology. I'm really interested in particularly in community, and you know how people see their lives and see their communities and see their neighbours and their environment.
Yes.
And I think it's how they develop their ideas. And there's lots, and there's a really big occult history in Torquay in the 19th century.
Really? So
what's that? What history?
Occult. As in. It basically means people believing in hidden things.
Mm.
So it's everything from spiritualism, massive spiritualism thing in the 19th century in Torquay.
Okay.
So you had lots... Basically what happened is that there was an awful lot of people that lived in the bay that were incredibly rich, had nothing to do, and they were very well educated.
Mm. Okay.
So they went round looking at exploring new ideas.
Okay.
There's also, I think the other thing, a lot of the occult ideas, you know, the palm readers and the tarot readers and the seances and the Ouija boards, they were all promoted by women.
Mm,
now, in the 19th century, there were a third more women than men in Torquay.
Why is that?
It's because we had five... It's a very... Well, Torquay was the richest town in England in about the 1890s.
Yeah.
So, and it sucked in huge numbers of female staff. So you had 500 of these great Italian villas and they all needed staff. Mm. Then you had all the hotels that all needed staff. So we just sucked in mainly female workers from across the whole county.
Yeah.
So you had very large numbers of women that lived in Torquay.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they did on their spare time was get involved. They couldn't go in pubs on their own. So they got, you know, quite involved in occult ideas.
Mm. Interesting. Like in the front parlour, you know, get out the candles and have a bit of a seance.
It's free.
Something.
And it also, it's one of the few things that's a professions a woman could do independently.
Mm. Okay.
So that and pub landlady, that and running guest houses. So they used to dismiss Torquay as what they called a woman's town.
Mm.
Oh.
So you get men's town, you know, like Sheffield and steel workers and South Wales, that man, you know, men's towns.
Yeah.
But tourist resorts are often called women's towns because women had that power base.
Yes.
And you didn't upset local landladies.
No.
And if you want to look at an illustration of that, where a woman was behind the scenes, the man was up at the front, but the woman was there with the power, with the control and the competence. And we look at Basil Fawlty and Sybil.
Right.
Yes.
So it's, and it was taken, that was really taken. If you look at old postcards, you know, this whole idea of a guest house landlady being, you know, powerful, aggressive, scary, and the little man in the background. That's a lot where it comes from. So that whole sort of occult thing.
Yeah.
So you had some really, you know, sort of well-known spiritualists like Violet Tweedale, who explored the most haunted house in England and things like that. Wow. It was just up the road from here.
Okay.
So there's loads of things like that.
Neat. So do you think that all of those seances and all of that occult activity, do you think that maybe that disrupted some of the energy here? Do you think that's why we have so many ghost stories now? Or do you think it's why there's so many like sightings and tales?
I think it sort of led into it.
Yeah?
And I think there's a lot of real reasons. You can actually believe that there are more ghosts in talking than anywhere else. Or you can think that the conditions for people seeing things and believing things are different.
Yeah,
and
it's
I think
perfect.
That's might be.
For
it depends what you like.
10 minutes at least, let's believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go into the 2% of the stories that really hooked you.
Yeah.
What's one that sticks out that you've done a lecture and then you've asked people for stories, and where were you? And what was the person's? What were you talking about originally in that talk, in that lecture? And then what was the story?
Oh, let's see. The one I quite like is because it's got multiple people that have seen it, and I've interviewed all of them.
Yeah.
Now I won't say which house it is, but there's a house up in the Warbreys in Torquay.
Yeah.
And it was one of those old, Victorian Edwardian houses. It turned into a care home, back in the 70s or 80s or something like that. Because a lot of these, big villas are absolutely ideal for care homes. They've got big, what do you do with a big Edwardian villa when you don't need 20 staff?
Yeah.
So they turned it into a care home, which meant that it had to have staff there overnight. Now, there was a story that Lily Langtry's ghost haunted that house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the legend was that Lily Langtry, who was the most famous sort of actress in the world, she had an affair with Prince Edward, who became King Edward, and they had that affair in Torquay. That's the storyline.
Okay.
So, and the story was that when Lily died, she haunted that house.
Yeah.
Now, I've spoken to four people because it was a care home, staff have to be there overnight.
Yes.
So they've got to be kept awake overnight. So three staff members and one manager have actually seen a Edwardian woman walking down the stairs separately without apparently knowing that there was a legend there, which is great. Except that Lily Langtry breaks all the rules of hauntings, because Lily Langtry didn't die in Torquay, wasn't buried in Torquay.
No.
There's no evidence that she actually ever lived in that house anyway.
Okay.
And
but maybe she just had the one night stand with Prince.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. She wasn't madly in love with him because she got around a bit.
A night to remember.
That's it.
She had a night to remember, and she spent the rest of her days remembering that night.
But the other problem is that she also is known to haunt five other houses in London. So she crops up all over the place, and one in Bournemouth is very similar.
She gets around.
She was busy.
Could she?
But she's checking out all the old.
No shame, old no spots. Shame.
But no, I've no doubt that those four women I've spoken to and interviewed, they absolutely saw something.
Yes.
And they all described a woman in Edwardian dress coming down. So I don't think it was Lady Lantry. Yeah,
okay. Right, right.
But I think what happens is if somebody saw an Edwardian woman.
Yes.
You know, it's either going to be the Queen or it's going to be somebody else. And I think, so they saw something, and that's four witnesses.
What, I mean, when they say they saw something, do they see her walk down and then run away? Or do they
slowly walk down the stairs and disappear.
As she's walking down the stairs. Okay.
So it's that kind of thing. But these things are all over the place. Just since we're talking about hospitality, just in the last 2 weeks, as soon as you start asking people, I've spoken to... two night porters. This could be another reason why there's lots of ghosts, because we're a hospitality town, because we're a tourist town. You need people staying awake all night.
Yes, that's true.
On their
own.
True.
Yeah.
So I've spoken to two night porters in two separate hotels. One at the top of town, in a really big hotel. I won't give the name.
Why won't we give names?
Imperial
Temple.
No.
Top of town.
And they were saying that he went into the cellar one night to collect something and saw a soldier, a First World War soldier with a helmet on. And I said, well, that's interesting, because Torquay was where a lot of soldiers came to, you know, during the war, which is the whole Agatha Christie thing about nursing injured soldiers.
Yes.
That was one. There's another hotel on the seafront.
Yes.
Torbay. And
Cherry Hotel.
Torbay Hotel. Yeah.
Okay. And what this gentleman was saying was that, I spoke to him just a couple of weeks ago, that CCTV, they looked out and they saw, because they've got benches outside, and they saw a Victorian young girl sitting on the bench.
Never.
So,
and it's on camera.
That's all been wiped off. But the Torbay Hotel has got other, you know, that they a few years ago, they actually had a photograph of a ghost coming down the stairs. But
wow. So
people love this kind of stuff.
Yes.
And one of the reasons we do it is that Torquay's much more than just the beach.
Yes.
Then you can go up to sort of certain places. There's rural ghosts. We've got them up everywhere from Barton Cross to Gallows Gate, where thousands of people were executed. So there's lots of, we tend to forget some, then others pop up.
Yeah, okay.
And there's the scientific ghosts.
Yeah, scientific ghosts.
Yeah, this is we had the most haunted house in England in Torquay.
Really? Yeah, where's that?
Up in the Warbury.
How do we judge something as the most haunted house?
It was the most most famous haunted house back in the early 20th century.
Yeah.
It's called Castellammare, and we've got photographs. And the reason we know about it is because there was two very well documented expeditions to find it.
Sure.
So the house was an old Victorian house, mansion, villa, as we call them. And for 50 years, it had this reputation of being haunted. So the whole thing that if you've ever seen a haunted house movie, it's in there.
Okay.
And actually, a lot of haunted house movies, even the Liam Neeson ones, are actually based on that.
Ah, that's
true. Wow.
Interesting.
Which again was built, possibly based on a book that was written in Torquay called The Haunted and the Haunters. But anyway, come back to that one. So for 50 years, this, it was things like dogs wouldn't walk past it, horses wouldn't go in the stables, anybody that rented it wouldn't stay for very long, doors unlocked, screams, footsteps, you know, the whole usual sort of weird haunted stuff.
The screams?
Middle of the night. Footsteps.
Very good.
We love this. We love the sound effects.
We're professionals here.
We are professionals. We sort of love it. So everything you've ever seen in a horror film, it was in there.
Yeah.
So in 1917, there's a lady called Violet Tweedale.
Yeah.
Who, we got photographs of her. She lived, coincidentally, she lived just down the road in the Warbreeze.
Yeah.
So she, in 1917, she got about a 10-strong group of people to investigate this. And she wrote a really big thick called Ghosts I Have Seen. And when you see photographs, she's got the long Edwardian dresses and things. So she investigated this for a few weeks. She went in and put, you know, like twigs over doors to see whether somebody was, you know, pretending to be it. And then she took a large group in, soldiers on leave from the First World War, bearing in mind it's 1917, and she took a medium in there. The medium was apparently possessed by something.
Mm-hmm.
The medium suddenly started screaming and in a deep, deep voice and things. A couple of the soldiers and that, big fellas, went and tried to grab this lady, and they were thrown against walls and then thrown through doors, and all got terribly exciting and get out of the house, you know, the whole exorcist type stuff. Then they did it again.
Yeah.
So there's your corroboration, you know, 10 people, 10 witnesses, happened again. And again, people thrown against walls.
Wow.
1917, note the date. 1921, there's another expedition went in there. Sort of another local guy and a Lord St. Audrey's went in, and they went round searching the house. One of them was thrown through a wall, through a doorway. Another one was possessed by something black and evil coming out of a cupboard and all of that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
And they did a survey and said it was supposed to be a doctor who had murdered one of his staff or one of the patients and killed himself. And, you know, it's all really scientific-y. But it's really unusual because traditionally 19th century ghosts were somebody you'd know. You wouldn't. So there'd be a relative or a friend, and they normally were quite passive and friendly.
Yes,
they just wanted something done.
Yeah, like so unfinished business kind of story.
They weren't buried properly, or somebody had nicked the family jewels, or they'd lost something.
Yeah.
And as soon as you buried them, then it They disappeared. Yeah, they go to heaven. The whole, sure. You know. And this goes back to the Romans, because the Romans believed in ghosts. But it's only in the sort of late 19th century, and early, particularly the early 20th century, you got violent ghosts. So 1917. So I think you get violent ghosts at violent times. See what I mean?
Makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, and there was a local author called Bulwer Lytton, who lived in Torquay on the Wharf. So where you get Lytton House, the block, the apartment block. So he lived here, and he wrote the first scientific ghost story in about the 1850s. And there's so much in that story that seems to be reflected in that haunted housey thing.
Yeah. Okay. So when you're saying scientific, is it like literally like the scientific method? Like you have a hypothesis, and then you take out and then you conduct experiments, and then you prove or disprove, like you do some kind of a method. Is that what you mean by scientific?
I think it's more that the supernatural moved on from ghosts just being, you know, friendly pseudo-scientific explanations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, okay.
That, you know, psychic power or telekinesis and those kind of things, and, you know, powerful personalities living on after death.
Yes.
Rather than just nice, cuddly, fluffy Casper ghosts.
Casper. Yeah.
So much, much more, you know, somebody tried to give an explanation. And the other idea is the stone tape thing.
What's that?
It's the BBC used it. It's the idea that if somebody has an extreme experience, you know, they're murdered or they saw something horrible, that their emotions will somehow embed themselves in the walls.
Mm.
And the emotions or the ghost?
The emotions. Same thing. It's like a stone tape recorder.
Okay. Like you leave an imprint of that trauma.
That's almost like an animalist.
It is, very much so.
Way of thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, so they're not sort of really conscious entities.
Yes.
They're just like memories that are embedded in the...
Yeah, they have spirits.
Same as where we can record something and then play it back.
Oh.
And that was the idea. So that's why, you know, if you go back to Barry Pomeroy, the whole idea that, which may not be true, that somebody was locked up in a dungeon, which isn't there, but their trauma and their unhappiness soaks into the walls.
Yes.
And when you go down into those dark places, you somehow soak it up.
Yes.
And you see things. That's more of a scientific-y.
Yeah,
kind of
I mean, evolutionary. I think ghost stories make a lot of sense because if there's a dark area, then the person who's going to be the most precautious around that dark area, they're probably going to have the highest chances of survivability. So that in that case, people who believe in ghosts, more likely to survive.
And I think that's it, I think it's a slight twist on that one, because I'm interested in evolutionary biology, because one of the suggestions is that that evolution favours people who are more suspicious of things.
Yeah.
So if you go back to, you know, we all lived in Africa, and so if you get to a waterhole, and it's normally full of animals, and then one day you go to the waterhole and it's not full of animals, then you suddenly think there's something wrong.
Yes.
So, which is why you see ghosts in places that are empty.
See what I mean? That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. And,
for sure.
And also that it links in something called pareidolia, which means we try and make patterns out of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So we've all done it. You know, you see a cloud and then you think, oh, it's a bunny rabbit.
Yeah.
You know, and the people that see Jesus in a slice of toast. So, and that's probably an evolutionary thing.
Yeah.
So you're trying to see through animals' camouflage.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that see through the camouflage and run away are going to survive, and they're going to reproduce. And the ones that ignore the funny striped things in the bushes get eaten and killed.
And
so
And you don't have much to lose if you're cautious and it's not a lion or a tiger.
And I think that's it, really.
It still benefits you to be cautious, whether that fear is real or not.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
And I always ask people, you know, where are you likely to see a ghost? You know, for an audience, and they'll always say, "Oh, an empty, a haunted house, or
derelict,
an old cinema, or a derelict, or a graveyard."
Yes, graveyard.
Where, you know, and when?
Yeah.
Well, it's at night.
Yeah.
So why don't you see ghosts in Sainsbury's on a Tuesday morning? Seriously,
I'm sure someone does.
Somebody will do.
I mean, on the other hand, though, there's, you know, it's not like we know everything.
No, absolutely, and I think that's it. You know, and there's other people coming out with this. You know, are there other dimensions? And is it physics? You know, quantum physics are coming out, some really weird and interesting ideas on this. And when, you know, where, and that's the whole thing about the onion, you know, you take away layer after layer until you come, and then I think, ooh, that's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that time slip one, I think that's fascinating on those.
Wait, what was that, sorry?
You know, the time slip when, you suddenly go back in time and you see whole landscapes that are different.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That really is interesting. But, and you can actually sort of tell how old a ghost story is by what it looks like.
Ah, okay, so what, if it's like, give us an example.
Okay.
Like,
perfect example. You know the old, the Scooby-Doo thing with a sheet over your head?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of ghost.
Yeah.
We all laugh at that and think that's completely, you know, comedic.
Yeah.
Anybody in the 18th century would have been terrified because we didn't used to bury people in coffins. We used to wind them with shrouds. And there was even a law that said that if you're going to bury somebody, it had to be in white wool.
Yeah.
It had to be in wool, which is normally white. So you can actually tell a ghost story. If you see somebody like that, it's a really old ghost story.
I understand, because the ghost in that sense is still wearing their...
Yeah, still wearing their burial shroud.
Yes.
See what
I
mean? So you can date that. You can date it with names of things.
Yeah.
There's a nice story up on Daddy Hole Plain, which is around the corner from where we are at the moment. And that was supposed... Daddy Hole means devil's hole, devil's cave. And the devil was supposed to be up there and was supposed to steal people's souls. And there's an old folk story of a woman called Matilda who sold her soul to the devil to get revenge on her boyfriend. And the devil came up, grabbed her, threw her over the back of his horse and jumped off the cliffs. And you can still hear Matilda's ghost screaming from the... and moaning from the... Very similar to that, actually.
Yes.
All right, brilliant.
Okay.
So do you have a ghost story for us today, Kevin?
Oh, let me see. As I said, most ghost stories are those glimpses of seeing things. And I've mentioned a few of them. There's more sort of complicated kind of ghost stories. The most famous ghost story in Torquay is Tor Abbey. 1588, this is the true stuff. 1588, the Spanish Armada tried to invade Britain or invade England. So the Spanish Armada came up the coast and we started picking off some of those Spanish galleons. Drake picked off a ship called the San Rosario. It's all absolutely true. Abandoned the rest of the fleet because he just wanted the money. Pulled the ship in and they docked it. They grounded it in Torbay. 397 Spanish sailors were captured and they're put in the Spanish barn, which is where you get the Spanish barn from, which is where we started. So, and we know all this. They were very expensive. The locals didn't like them. They all came from Brixham, came from St. Mary Church. And so we got rid of them as quickly as we possibly could. They were there for about 2 weeks. So then the legend started happening. So after that, people were saying they're all murdered in the Spanish barn, which they weren't. Mm. We knew between those 397 being in the barn and when they were counted again, about 15 of them died. Sure. And they'd just been in a big battle, so it's not surprising.
Yeah.
But so the streets weren't running red with blood, as they're saying. They haven't got the ghosts of Spaniards running up and down Upton. That's, again, rubbish.
A potential for 15.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, quite possible. But the story was that we murdered them all and they tried to escape and it was all, that's all made up.
Yes.
So, but the bigger story is that there was one of the captured Spanish sailors wasn't a man, it was a woman. And it was supposed to be either the daughter or the wife or the sister of one of the Spaniards. And the idea was that the Spanish were so convinced they were going to capture England, they wanted to be first on land to grab the best estates and grab all the stuff. So what they did was this woman dressed up as a cabin boy. That's the story.
Okay.
And then she died of disease, actually, and she's supposed to haunt outside of Tor Abbey and wander up and down and wearing this big Spanish mantilla, you know, with a big sort of dress.
What's a mantilla look like?
It's just like, you know, the big sort of old Spanish...
I don't.
You know, the long
you know. No one does, Kevin, no, only
okay,
you.
Okay, if you look at 16th century pictures of Spanish ladies or English ladies, you know, the big long dresses. Long dress, that's mantilla. So where did she, if she died dressed as a cabin boy, unless heaven has a dressing up box, where did she get that? I mean, that sort of thing.
Yes.
But the whole, all old buildings develop ghost stories and legends.
Yeah.
And I think there's also supposed to be a headless monk that hangs around Tor Abbey. There's also supposed to be Lady Carey's ghostly coach that goes up and down along Avenue Road, which is hitting buses, I guess. So,
I mean, My parents have the Cherry Tree Hotel, which is the pink one, the old Victorian, next to the Esplanade Bay Hotel.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
And there's a ghost in there, for sure.
Excellent. Right, describe it. When and where?
Definitely it's like a woman. I don't know what she looks like. I haven't seen her. I've just heard her.
Mm.
Yeah. There's creaks when there's no one in the hotel.
Yeah.
The dog park sometimes.
Yes, yep.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
Nope. All patterns and things like that.
Yeah.
And as we were saying, that's the things with a lot of these kind of ghosty stories. There's not much to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody saw something on a Tuesday night, and you know, it's when you get some kind of a backstory, then you try and explore what those kind of backstories actually are, and why people believe them. I mean, that's exciting.
I believe the ghost in the cherry tree. I'm pretty sure she lives in one of the attic rooms.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you know this, but those, for ours at least, the attic actually used to be hotel rooms.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's bizarre because you have like a ladder going up to the attic, and then you'll have these two kind of, we have them as storerooms now, but you have the door numbers on them.
Mm.
You have the boiler and all the piping running through the room, through the room. Mm-hmm. But that's where the coach drivers would have slept.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure she lives in one of those rooms. Yep. I'm almost certain of that.
Absolutely. And I mean, going back to that Fawlty Towers thing, an awful lot of people did die in hotels,
yeah.
You know, because they come on holiday, it's the first time they drank or eaten too much and got too excited and took it with older guests. I mean, because my family had a Glenrothes Hotel on Avenue Road, and which is now number 25. That was our...
So oh, grew up never.
You know, it's crazy.
That's spooky.
Yeah, well, we've got something to tell you then after we're done recording.
Oh, right. Yeah, other guys there. Yeah, my parents turned that from a doctor's surgery into a hotel. So
brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah, that's good. So did you have a ghost in your hotel?
No, unfortunately not.
No, it's good for business though, isn't it?
It is. People will pay more to... And that's the other thing you've got to look.
People will come. Yeah.
Who makes money out of ghost stories?
Mm.
And I've gotten this. I mean, Talkie Museum had the ghost of a mummy and Britain's sexiest ghost up there. Pulls people in. honestly.
Britain's sexiest ghost.
Wow. In the Daily Mail, in the Daily Mirror. A wonderful bit of marketing.
What a great PR story.
It must be true.
Take that, Patrick Pony.
Yeah, it is. And that's it. Who makes money out of these things?
Yeah.
There's a little pub I used to go to. Called the Clipper, it's shut down now. And I went in there one day, and Dave the landlord said, "You wouldn't believe what I saw recently." So what's that? And it's about 11:30. So during the day, said he came down to open up the pub, went behind the bar, glanced over, and he said there was an old man smoking a pipe, wearing a flat cap with a sort of white jumper on, like a fisherman's jumper.
Yeah.
And he said, "I wasn't frightened." He says, "First thing I thought is that somebody's smoking in my pub. I'm going to lose my license." So he said he went around the bar to say, "Look, sorry," because he thought his son had opened up half an hour early.
Yeah.
And the man had disappeared.
Oh.
So then he started talking to some of the old... And I thought this, you know, really fascinating. And he started talking to some of the locals. And the old local said, "Oh, that's where Jack used to sit."
Oh.
"And that looks like old Jack." So immediately... that ghost has got a name.
Yes.
And a story, a backstory.
It is. And then backstory. Then it went for the next couple of weeks. When anything ever went wrong,
it's
Jack did it.
Yeah.
You know,
and I was in there once and the jukebox went wrong.
Yeah.
And somebody said, "Oh, old Jack never did like Celine Dion, you know." So it's all... I was talking to a journalist I know from the Herald Express and just said, you know, and they said, "Oh, that sounds interesting." So so they sent down a photographer and we did Talkie's Most Haunted Pub. That night, that place was packed.
Yeah, I bet.
And then all of the people really interested in this came in and started talking to the old guys and saying, "Well, you know, can you tell us about this?" And the story just grew. I saw it grow.
It's like a meme.
It is.
They take lives of their own. They're interesting. The meme evolves.
Yeah.
As the story is told to someone else, they add their little bit. And the little bits that are the catchiest, they're the ones that...
People remember,
and they're the ones that told, and then there's a little modification, just like it evolves.
Yeah,
it literally evolves, the meme. And the ghost story, I assume, is just the
and
exact
it's from
same.
1 or 2 seconds, you know, somebody glancing over, and it could have been a trick of the light, it could have been a real goat, it could have been whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, I remember there was one of the old fellas talking to a couple of young folks who'd bought him a pint, So it's that instant reward. You know, so it's, you could see the instant reward. And this old gentleman said, oh, yeah, that's when there used to be a morgue downstairs. I said, what? You know, sure, there'll never be. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. But it's replicate somebody yes, working money out.
It's a good story. It's
and
a good story.
Will quite happily pay like 25 quid to sit in an old, you know, deserted building.
Yeah.
You know, record things and take photographs. So.
And then it's interesting because when you think about what's like, do you believe in the ghost story? It doesn't really matter.
No.
The story, like, that's how we communicate. It's how we build our realities is through stories.
And
I don't have any personal evidence that this cup is made out of atoms, but I've been told a very compelling story.
Yes.
And I therefore believe that this cup is made out of atoms.
Mm.
It's the story is the way that we process our realities.
It is. And that's how we deal with grief, and it's how we, you know, and that's, then there's a very high number of people in Torbay and Torquay that have got drug and alcohol issues. A lot of people end up here with mental health issues. And so that's one of the reasons I'm really interested in local history, because you can't really understand the challenges that we've got in Torquay at the moment unless you understand the history of things and how people process information and understand their world and how they gain power.
What's your background? Like, it's Dr. Dixon.
Yeah.
What's the doctor?
My doctorate was in sociology, but okay. I'm particularly interested in ideology and, you know, how people think.
Spooky stuff.
Kind of like community.
And a lot of it is. Yeah, so I do a lot. I chair Health Watch in Torbay, which is looking at health and social care.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in how you stop people being sick in the first place.
And that's
one of the reasons I got into this.
Yeah.
Because I know that if we do, if I put an event on, that lots of people will turn up to it.
Yeah.
And I mentioned, you know, I can get, you know, 100, 200, 300 people turning up to an event. And one of the real challenges we've got, let's see, the average age in Torbay is 49. The average age in the rest of the country is 40. So we've got a much more, you know, greater aging community. Yeah. For the first time in human history, we're living this long.
Yeah.
So, and even when I was growing up, I mean, I'm 63 now, even when I was younger, it was normal to work till you were 65. Within 5-10 years, you'd be dead.
Yeah.
Not now. You know, you're going to live 20, 30, 40 years, you know, after you retire.
Yeah.
People are retiring in their 40s and 50s. Work has changed. Employment's changed. We seem to be getting a growing division between the rich and the poor, polarisation.
Yeah.
So what do you do with huge numbers of people that stop working when they're 60?
Yes.
What do they do for the next 20, 30 years?
Come to Torbay.
Yep. They're already here.
What do those ones do?
Yeah, how do you keep them fit?
Yeah.
And we know that people are living long, but they're not living longer healthier.
Okay, so it's not like those extra 20 years are like more joyous or more fulfilled. It's just that it's just
longer. It varies. Yeah. And a lot of it's to do with poverty.
Okay.
And a lot of it's to do with social isolation.
Yeah, okay, that makes
sense. And one of the reasons I'm interested in fun, interesting local history that isn't boring stuff. It's not about field systems and it's not about kings and queens. It's about, you walk down through the town centre and you look at a house and you look at a building and you think, you know, why is it there?
Yeah.
And I know, particularly for men, because a lot of men, you know, tend to don't get involved in anything. They just sit at home and the danger is they drink too much or they just get bored and depressed. And they just don't get involved in community activities. History drags people in.
Yeah.
And the ghost thing. I mean, the ghost is the hook.
Yes.
You know, the funny comedy stories and the weird stuff. And then once people are in, just, it's so important for people to do things and keep themselves fit. And if they don't. And that's how Torquay started, as a health resort.
So if there's someone listening around 55, 60 years old, maybe they're coming up to retirement or starting to think about it, What would be your three biggest recommendations for them today?
I just think don't see, you know, 65 as either or whatever the retirement date is a finish to anything. It's the beginning of something.
Sure, I mean, okay.
And you've now got the time and hopefully you've got the resources to actually develop your own particular interests, whatever it is.
Okay, so it's like a frame change.
I think so. Yeah, you've done you know, work that time. So it's get involved in things. Just go out. Just do something.
Yeah.
It's so that's the most dangerous time of your life, really. Just by the time you finish, don't sit at home.
Yeah.
You know, just plan for that. I think I'd do something on those lines.
Yeah.
And Torbay's ideal for that. I mean, we've just got that. We've got those opportunities. You've got the hospitality. You've got the coast walks. There's what they call, you know, little jobs on the side you can do. So you don't finish completely. Some of this, some of it, some of your entertainment, you know, your hobbies will pull in kind of funding.
Yeah.
What I always say in health and social care, and I was at a meeting this morning with somebody from Newcastle, is that coastal resorts, you know, the Margates, the Blackpools, the Torquays, because of history, because of, you know, the culture, because we haven't got that sort of, that kind of industry, we're about 20 years ahead of the rest of the, rest of the country.
That's interesting.
You know what I mean?
That's so interesting.
So we're a lot older.
Yeah.
So we've got pockets of this real deprivation.
Yeah.
Very high numbers of people that are receiving services.
Yeah.
High numbers of people with disabilities. So if we don't sort out some of those social issues in Torquay, Paignton and Wrexham, the rest of the country is going to be hitting the same problems in 20, 30 years. So let's experiment here and now.
What's some interesting experiment concepts that you've come across?
I think of a lot of it is the, it's one of the things we're trying to do with history. You know, we've just attracted this 10-year, £10 million heritage money that's come in.
Oh, yeah.
So that's just come in.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we use heritage and museums and Old Way and all of that to encourage people to get involved in their own communities and activities?
Yeah.
Right, so that's a new grant. The new grant that was just announced like 2 weeks ago. Oh, sorry, that's not Levelling Up. Okay, yeah.
So kind of like in Old Way Mansion, how you have that gardeners group, which is
perfect example, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, because it's a group of lovely people. Mm. Most of them, I'd say, are
older.
I mean, they're all older than me, but. Yeah. Most of them, I'd say, in retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady we spoke to, Jo Jones, lovely.
Yes.
So sweet.
She was saying that actually, at first, she was thinking to do a little bit of gardening in her own garden.
Mm.
And then she stumbled across the Old Way project and she just got absolutely hooked. Mm. And I think there is that sense of community that she gets there, which brings a much bigger sense of purpose than, you know, there's purpose in gardening. You know, you want to see your fruits grow and you want to eat that fruit. Mm-hmm. And it tastes delicious because you grew it and you watered it. But then when you have that, but also combined with, it wasn't just me who grew this. I planted it, someone else watered it, and someone else picked it. And now we're all part of this harvest. We're all part of this celebration that now the food's, you know, ready to eat. Why smiling like that?
No, I think it's absolutely perfect. I mean, that's the kind of thing, isn't it? And you replicate that in a thousand different ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And it could be anything. You could be a stamp collector. You could be into music, and you could be.
How would you find those communities? Like even myself, I like stand-up boarding. I like let's say coastal lifestyle activities.
Yeah.
But even me and my circle, me and my sister.
Mm.
Would struggle to find that community. We've looked on Facebook, don't trust the group so much. It's just there's a friction of joining the group. How would someone 65 find a group for them?
Yeah, I think it's word of mouth. I mean, a lot of it's that, and you can trust, and there's organisations that are incredibly welcoming. As you was suggested, I think that some of these are quite insular. You know, and I mean, I chair a small grants committee, so if people want to set something up, you know, we can get them a couple of £100 to sort of set up a group themselves.
Okay.
I think you do sort of internet searches and things like that, but be sceptical, you know, just look around, try and get things. We always need volunteers for different stuff. Depends what your interests are, I think.
I think that's right. Yeah, word of mouth, though. That's the best way. Yeah, if you've got a friend who's part of a group and they say, hey, do you want to come? It's a good one. I'm part of this group. And they joined because they had a friend.
Mm-hmm.
But then that kind of leaves out the most insular of people who I'm assuming are the most at risk of these challenges.
Yeah, and I think it's putting on public events, which is what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, for my own, you know, personal health, I said I'm sort of retired and I'm a full-time carer.
Yeah.
But my way of keeping myself happy is, you know, getting involved in, you know, history and culture and giving these talks. And I think tomorrow morning I'm doing the Babbicombe Probus. So there'll be 30, 40 people there, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, and people will turn out to things, and people are interested in things like family history, do a lot of stuff on that.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And that's something personal, something they can get involved in.
Yes.
And it avoids that danger of you sitting at home watching Emmerdale.
Yeah.
For the next 20 years, and getting depressed about it and worrying about things, and that natural environment thing, and it doesn't, and that's one of the reasons why we did the walking festivals. We do all of that kind of activity, and then
bring people together.
I think that's it, and I'd like to see this 10-year heritage project as a way of involving everybody
yeah.
and exploring their own histories. And there's so many histories to be written.
Yeah,
you know, because I've written a book, but the I think you can sort of glance in. You can explore. There's nobody's written a proper LGBT history of Torquay.
Yes, okay.
I don't know, sure. A disabled person's history of Torquay, a woman's history of Torquay. You know, all of those kind of things.
Yes, all those communities.
Yeah, yeah, all of those kind of communities. And I think it empowers people. And yeah. then you can go down to areas. You know, there's been books written about Ellicombe.
Yes.
That, you know, why isn't there a history of Preston?
Yeah, okay.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know. So, and a history and a culture. And people love it before you lose it. That's the yeah. other thing. Because yeah, people pass on, and people are interested in, as I said, not the big history. They're interested in pubs. That's yeah. another thing. One yeah. of my favourite talks, I do pubs and clubs of Torquay. And I just put something on the internet, and between Tor Station and the harbour side, the story was that there were 23 pubs.
Yeah.
I put it out and said, can you list all the pubs? And pubs that have gone and come, 169 we got up to.
Really? Wow.
But a lot of them were like a, you know, like a club that's got 8 different names.
Yeah.
But you remember it.
Yeah.
You know, and when I give talks to people with dementia,
yeah.
they can't remember what happened yesterday, but they love
that's so interesting.
Talking yeah. about that's interesting. What they, you know, what they drank on yes. a Saturday mm. night
yeah.
in, I don't know, the yacht in Torquay Harbourside. Yeah. And that's really generates people and people like that.
Yeah, I assume that was a big part of their life. That was a big part of yeah. their day to day. That was
yeah
probably
what movies they saw, percentage. Anything like that. So
yeah, you mentioned you have a book out.
Yeah, you wrote a book.
We've got
Torquay,
it in front
of a social
us.
History by
oh,
Kevin
I wasn't
Dixon.
Plugging it,
but no, we are. So yeah, a 10,000-year journey telling how a collection of rural hamlets came together to become the richest town in England.
Yep.
Sounds like a great story.
Thank you.
So yeah, I look for that. We're going to have Kevin.
How do we find that?
Oh, the tourist office was selling them. Just
tourist office, yeah.
Just down the road, or Artisan Gallery have been really kind and
okay.
and mail it out. So
and if a hospitality business owner, like a hotel owner or something, mm-hmm. they want to sell it in their hotel,
just get in touch. I'm get sure touch, we can
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, and the best way to get in touch is
just Google or
yeah,
or do a search for Kevin Dixon history and just give me a shout.
Sure,
and I think. We're moving on from, you know, just the beach and the bucket and spade idea of hospitality.
Yeah.
What I find whenever I do talks, people are fascinated by the writers and the culture and the history.
Yeah, no,
and the ghost thing.
At the Cherry Tree Hotel, we've definitely had some guests who, if they saw that on the bookshelf, I mean, maybe it'd be a case of us just having one on the bookshelf.
And I think that's fine. And the library's got them. They tend to go out quite nicely.
Yeah. No, I'm saying like yeah. if the hotel owner just has purchases one.
Yep, just get one, just leave it there.
Puts it in the lobby, and then, you know, we've definitely had guests who would spend a night in that book. That would be their rainy afternoon activity is learning about the place that they're in.
Yeah. It's the good and the bad stuff and how things have changed.
Yeah.
And social change. As I said, we used to be the richest town in England, we're not now, but it's all in there why.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I think that's why what I'm interested and how you change it.
Yeah.
And now you challenge, you know, some of those old stereotypes of Torquay and...
Yeah.
I see Lily Langtree in here.
Oh, that's it. You just open the bit with Lily Langtree.
Yeah. Right. Now we've got a rapid fire round for you, Kevin. Are you
right.
ready? Right? Rapid
yep.
fire. Right. So on a scale of 1 to 5...
Mm-hmm.
No, let's do 1 to 10. It'll be easier. 1 is the least haunted and 10 is the most haunted. Are you ready?
Oh.
Wait.
Right.
Babbicombe Beach.
Least.
Well, so that's a 1, 2?
Well, I'd say a 3 because you've got the Babbicombe Lee stuff down there, but yeah. that's mm-hmm. not really haunted. Yeah. But yeah.
Okay, right. Kent's Cavern.
I'd put that at about an 8 because you've got malicious pixies and you've got ghosts and you've got legends that go back to probably about the 18th century up there.
Okay, right. Crazy. Kent's Cavern's an 8. Tor Abbey.
Oh, you've got to be 10.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And Torquay Museum with the sexy ghost.
That's it. Oh, that's another, I'd say about a 7.
Yeah.
A 7? Okay. Wait,
you didn't rate that sexy ghost. You've seen sexier.
You've seen better.
I've seen sexier. We have got photographs of various of cleavage and things. I might send you those.
Oh my gosh!
Because they were in the Daily Mail
Kevin,
and the Daily Mirror.
Right. Please don't send that to Callum's work email. We've got right. standards here.
So they've been dead for 200 years, so you should be safe. Right, yeah.
I don't think that changes anything.
Okay,
but it might make things worse.
Right, Cockington.
Yes, another eight.
Ooh.
Lots of stuff up there.
Ooh,
yes.
Okay.
We even got photographs of Cognitan ghosts.
Really?
Appeared in a local newspaper. Okay. We all got terribly excited, but it looks more like somebody smoking in the bushes, I think.
There you go.
It's all on the internet. All this stuff on the internet.
Is it a ghost or is it Chad?
I know, right?
Yeah. It's all on the internet. If you just Google Kevin Dixon talking ghosts, it should give you lots of photographs.
I know, but, you know, Googling isn't what a podcast is about. No. We need to hear these stories. Right. The Princess Theatre.
I haven't seen anything, and I've had sort of guided tours and things. Theatres normally do have a ghost. I mean, it's that whole thing about any public space there where people should be and they aren't. It puts people's nerves on edge. So, but again, I'd say, yeah.
But the Princess Theatre is always packed, so yeah. They don't have that problem.
But, you know, out of time, if you just wander around anything like that.
So. Mm, okay, right. How about the Paignton Zoo?
Nothing I've seen.
Nothing. So that's a one. Or
I would have thought so.
No ghostly
Somebody
lions.
Somebody will have seen something.
Yeah.
Really? So how about...
Have you turned into the skeptic now?
I have. Yeah, definitely.
There's lots of... I mean, we can talk about sea monsters. We can talk about... There's a yeti that apparently is up at Churston, which they thought might have been an escape something from the zoo, but they denied it. But there's lots of stories.
Interesting. Right. What about Berry Head?
Yeah. There's quite a few things up there.
Really?
So seven, something like that.
Really? Okay, thank you for that. So, right, and to wrap up, where do we find Dr. Kevin Dixon after hours?
Oh, what do I do after hours? Usually on the computer after hours, or at meetings, or at conferences.
You said earlier, I was actually going to mention this, the after hours bit, because you said at the very beginning of the podcast that if you've ever got some spare time, you're just searching for these...
Yeah.
What did you say exactly?
Oh, I mean, I'm always, you know, looking at sort of new ideas and searching for different things and just chatting to people.
I just imagine you just in the gallows.
Oh,
I'm
always
around
looking
the town,
at stuff like that.
Peeking around.
I just like talking to
searching
people.
Searching for ghosts.
And the thing is, so, you know, because people know I've written the book and I'm interested in this, they come up, they search me out.
Yeah.
And say, have you heard about this kind of stuff? Is it true that Hitler wanted to live in Torquay? You know, that's another legend.
Okay.
Did you know that? Did Napoleon father a baby from Paignton?
Sure.
All of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's yeah or no, or this story crops up somewhere else.
Yeah.
Legend's really interesting. So it's just the kind of stuff I think is fascinating.
That's beautiful. Brilliant.
That
Thank
beautiful.
You so much. Thank you so much for coming on today and for sharing your ghost stories with us. It's brilliant.
It's absolute pleasure. Let's do it again sometime.
I'm keen.
Cheers
to
Torbay
and ghosts.
Right. Happy That's Halloween, it. Everyone. Happy Halloween.
Thank you very much.
Fascinating interview.
Really, really interesting. All right. Now, thanks for listening, everyone. Please subscribe. Like it. You can actually ask us any questions directly on Spotify, which is awesome. We'll give your feedback.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe we'll have a poll this week. So yeah, we'll put up a question on Spotify and we'll include a poll as well so that you guys can interact more with the show. We would love that.
Yeah. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Easter egg.
That's you.
Easter egg.
Yes.
Podcast script.
Yes.
Easter egg.
What is it a question or are you just making a sentence?
H3 Easter egg.
I don't know what you're saying. I gotta go.